Welcome to the Work Dynamics Podcast, your source for information related to modern business workflows. I am your host, Scott Williams, along with my co-host, Grant Bafulci. Today's topic, government's growing need for smarter correspondence. Grant, let's talk about smarter correspondence and what smarter really means. Yes. Before anyone gets, you know, like really offended by the title of this particular episode, it's, I think like what we see, and look, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like modernization is a wonderful yet terrible thing. I think it pushes people to do better things with more modernized systems, but at the same time, it's a burden to modernize those systems. It's, you know, I mean, historically, like you look at government departments of any type in any country, you know, they tend to work in silos. Like the individual services like are developed, you know, completely independently of one another. It's that means that, you know, the data is for all of these different siloed departments is, you know, in disparate legacy systems. And heaven forbid that they should integrate with each other, because that would be weird and scary, right? But the thing is like going back in time, like you think some of these legacy systems, it's like here's the first question I'll ask you is that, does it apply still? And perhaps this is the root of the issue with government struggling to become quote unquote smarter in the sense of like digital systems that speak to one another and connect with one another. Is it a scenario of if it ain't broke, don't fix it? And that's why so many government departments are still, plagued with legacy systems. There you go. That don't necessarily talk to you anything outside of their departments. Is that an issue that we're seeing still?
I think it's multifaceted, right? I mean, I think there's a lot. I wouldn't say if it ain't broke, don't fix it, but it's a level of prioritization. So what happens is we have to deal with putting out fires, and I say we, I'm talking about government organizations, putting out fires where fires are to be had. I think where technology is moving so quickly that it's very difficult for large organizations to move at the same pace. And there is a lot of looking at history, right? So you have departments that are in silos for different reasons. One, because there is a government aspect to it where it's that information is kept within one individual department and isolated in some capacity. I think the history there is that we've done this for a long time and nobody's getting in trouble for the way that we've done things in the past. So let's kind of stay there. And then I think that they're trying to do a lot more. They have the same level people, amount of what we'd call FTEs or, you know, full-time employees, and the world is asking for 10 times as much or 100 times as much information. Open government, I want to be able to see everything. Why can't I do this the same as it's easy for me to get on my banking app and do all the things? Why can't I do that with all my public-facing stuff as well? And there's a lot of risk. And so I think the government is sitting there saying, like, we are trying to accommodate the speed at which technology is changing, but there's a lot of information that we have to be very careful about what we share and don't share, because we can get in a lot of trouble for exposing things that aren't supposed to be exposed. And then you have departments that are saying, well, you know, we have all different levels of security. So whether you're talking to a more secret organization, what they want to share and can share is way different than, say, maybe Transport Canada. But you also have the restrictions of making sure that protected B information is kept confidential. So any personal information. I mean, the government has a lot of personal information on individual citizens. and they have to make sure that that doesn't get exposed. And the liability to that exposure is very significant. So whatever we've done for the past 30 years has not caused us any significant exposure. Let's stay that way as much as possible. So there's a real balance act between trying to keep up with technology and trying to stay protected.
So you had mentioned one thing, and this goes into, and I'm going to say the words out loud, so, you know, just so the audience gets really angry when I say this, but the term digital transformation. I want to put like a big echo on that every time we say it, right? Is that, but here's the thing, is the digital transformation, we've discussed this in the past, is that there is a sense of, and I think you really nailed it, that expectation thing, right? Like it's where let's age ourselves for a moment, right? Going way back in time, it used to be that technology was, in big business, big corporate, big government, those kind of things were the driving force of technology and technological innovation and expectation. I say that in the sense of even, you know, I remember way back when, you know, in the 90s, you know, when I first started my career, it's like, you know, you get hand-me-down computers from IT and a, you know, in the early 2000s, here's a refurbed phone or something, a phone that some other employee had before you. But the computers that you had, the gear that you had, like all of those things were way better than you could ever want as a, as an individual, in the sense that like what you could buy, if you know what I mean, right? Like it's that was the pinnacle of, like, I remember the computer that I had back in like 2000, and oh my God, the processing speed, like the company I worked for spent so much money, way more than I could have ever spent on a computer like that to do my job. Fast forward even, you know, 5 years, 10 years, you know, with the advent of especially, I will say, mobility, in the sense of, you know, iPhones and, you know, Android phones, those kind of things, and the app world as is, it got really weird, because I think it really kind of flipped the switch on that, where people were suddenly, hey, wait a minute, the technology that I have in my hand is way better than anything I could ever get with an employer. I know people that have literally gone into jobs and they're like, hey, here's your 4-year-old Dell computer. And they're like, I have a brand new laptop sitting on my counter at home. Can I use that? Like, so you had to bring your own device thing, all those kind of things. Long story short, what happens is that the ecosystem in and around that, with mobile apps, and you mentioned it, right? Like whether it's from banking to ordering a coffee online to, God, now you can actually like configure and order cars to condos to everything else through mobile apps. Mm-hmm. The expectation that places on every other industry is really difficult to keep up with, I will say.
Right.
So if we go back to the government scenario, you're absolutely right. I mean, if we look at it from the perspective of, hey, this has never gotten us in trouble, you know, from like, you know, like data issues and those kind of things, great. But I think simultaneously, it's like, you know, this is why the title of this podcast today is the growing need for smarter correspondence, is that smarter correspondence isn't, you know, aimed at people. It's the smarter as in smarter systems that speak to one another because of that growing expectation. Mm-hmm. And I think like around that too, it's like, so let's talk about some of these points, right? Is that, so what are the problems that a lack of smarter systems and smarter correspondence cause? Say for instance, the inability, I will say, you know, to coordinate, and this is like going back to your thing as far as data, right? Is that the inability to coordinate and say, enforce rules and policies around information sharing. Let's talk about that, because that's going to be one of those issues where, how does a government moving towards a smarter system balance that problem with the new modern expectation of, hey man, like I'm sending you everything from, you know, like from the intake perspective, you think like, you know, PDFs to emails to form fills to whatever it may be. How do governments balance that?
Yeah, it's a very difficult process. Now, I've been in touch with some different organizations, and I talk about government organizations that are going to a card approach, which basically gives you like access. So one of the governments that's really ahead of the curve in this is Estonia, if you can believe it. And they have access card, which is basically your connection to government. Everything that you do is on that card. If you want to apply for a driver's license or check the status of your hunting license or fishing license, all of that sort of stuff is available to you. Now, Estonia is a small country and centralized government, so they're a little bit different than some of the bigger, you know, the bigger players here. But the challenge really comes down to how quickly can we expose whatever information we want to be able to expose without getting ourselves in trouble. And really, the issue, I think, is that the departments have, you know, in Canadian government at least, have really always been siloed because one level of government is different than a different level of government and applies to a different level of input, intake, and exposure to the public. I think that government maintains this responsibility to the citizenship to make sure that they're not ever going to be a point of breach. And so there's always a concern that if they open something up, if they expand something, then there's going to be a way for them to be hacked or exposed or even by accident let some information out. So it's a very difficult process to go through. And the departments historically don't communicate with each other consistently, and they don't have reason to, for the most part. But the problem is that a department, say Department A or Department B, they don't need to communicate with each other. But what the difficulty is they're concentric around the citizen. And the citizen says, well, if I'm talking to Transport Canada or talking to a different organization, why can't I see the same information? Well, those departments don't share that information amongst each other. So that's really the complication. But me as a citizen, I go, hey, it's me. So whether I talk to Department A, B, or C, I should be able to see everything in one place. And that's just difficult for those departments because they don't communicate in that way. And so until there's an underlying overhaul of the infrastructure there, that's going to be a really difficult process for them to get through.
So here's another difficult process. When we talk about modernization, kind of that, so let's use the smarter theme for a moment. Okay. The work smarter, not harder, right? So looking on that flip side of okay, so the individual, like, so whether it's US, Estonia, UK, Canada, Australia, wherever we are, the expectation of the citizen is like, hey, can I get my stuff, please? Can I get access to, can I get my service? You know, like one of the things that, you know, in Canada even right now, like we're seeing it, right? Like look at the passports.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. People are literally camping out like it's a Led Zeppelin reunion concert, right? They've got tents outside of buildings waiting to get their passports. And I think this is probably where, you know, this is they're really hurting as well. And you talk about that, you know, kind of work smarter, not harder scenario, is that when government employees suffer the burden of having to, you know, process information manually through all of these different disparate sources, you know, it's like then you get like that like duplicate records, wrong records. Like trying to find records, like whatever it may be. And so how do governments overcome that? Because there's obviously a, like, you know, with all these files and all of these different places, how do you solve that?
Yeah, that's a tough one, right? There's a lot of things. I mean, what we have to realize too is there's a multitude of levels of exposure that people are willing to deal with, right?
Mm-hmm.
So So, hey, you want some information? I mean, you know, it doesn't go that far, or it's not out of anybody's realm of imagination to express the fact that there are people that will not allow their phone to track where they are, do not want to keep information. They want to be off the grid in some capacity, right? Because, you know, you can simply get onto an app, as you discussed, and then you get on a browser, and 5 seconds later, you're back on your app, and there's an advertisement for what you just looked at. It happened to me yesterday, and that drives me a little crazy. It's a little bit scary. It's worse to think that the government is doing that for mm-hmm. some reason. So, you know, these guys walking around with aluminum hats, thinking that, you know, Big Brother is watching them and doing all that sort of stuff, and then turning around and saying, other people are saying, well, if I apply for a license here or apply for a license here across departments, how come you can't see everything? Well, there's an equal amount of people, I won't say equal, but there's certainly a group of people that say, I don't want you to have exposure to everything that I have and know what I'm doing and tracking and whatever. That's a separation of government and personal, right? There's privacy-related issues. So it goes back and forth, I mean, depending on what your position is, and one doesn't fit everybody. So I don't know. I mean, the clearly what we want to be able to do is have communication lines open through correspondence channels or whatever it is. But then there's a whole group out there that says, I don't want that department or another department to see this. I'm sending one specific letter in or one specific bit of information in, and I want to be able to track and trace that and have accountability, but I don't need everybody in the government to know that, you know. So it's a really difficult process, and it has gone. We are, you know, we're not that far out of a non-digital age, right? I mean, it wasn't that long ago, to be quite frank, that the most advantageous bit of technology was when the phone companies decide to give you like a 25-foot extension cord for your phone so you could talk in privacy by running the cord across the room and into your bedroom. Because other than that, your phone was hanging on your kitchen wall and everybody in the house knew when you got a call, who you talked to, and how long you talked to them. You know, the little bit of privacy you had was running that flexi cord all the way into a different room or into a closet so you could have a private conversation with your boyfriend.
But you know what? That's an excellent point, right? It's funny. I mean, you know, the call it the comical portion of this podcast, but it's the where I grew up on a farm in the middle of nowhere, we were on a party line.
Exactly.
And it's like you knew who was, you know, the call was for by, oh, our ring is two short rings, one long. Yeah. And it would ring everybody's house, you know, 10 other farmhouses would ring simultaneously, and you knew it was for you because it was your ring. It never stopped, you know, and I hate to say this, you know, to my grandmother, I love you, but she was the one that was like, oh, I'm going to pick up the phone and listen to people's conversations. That right. was one person ago. Like you're right. Like, you know, this arc of the digital age has happened so quickly. Right. Like you think like it's, you know, that party line scenario was in with that's our lifetime.
Right.
Right. We're not that old. We're middle aged. Let's just leave it at that for the audience. But it's, you know, and then, as I said, if you look back at even that arc of OK, in the early 2000s, yes, 22 years ago was the, hey, I get a much nicer computer from, you know, work than I do, you know, that I can afford myself. That didn't take long to change.
Right.
That was a 3 to 5 year arc, and it was like suddenly everything changed. I look at the concept of digital telephony. You know, I was working for a company back in 2004, 2005 that was a voice over IP company mm-hmm. where everybody was trying to be their own phone company by having a PBX box in there. That didn't last very long. That whole thing shifted to then kind of the hosted business phone scenario. So companies moved to those, and that was only a 24 to 36 month shift. So it's like, yeah. all of these different technologies, though, yes, like we're talking about things like telephony and that kind of stuff, but it's not so different, right? It's like you look at the web 1.0 versus 2.0 versus 3.0 and those kind of things is how information was shared, where the, let's not forget that the internet just a decade ago was still struggling with two-way communication in a lot of ways.
Right.
It was still forums and those kind of things, and now it's, you know, everything is instantaneous. And then you push everything forward just even in the last 2 years as far as the work from anywhere, you know, constant connectivity, global connectivity, that just all around ubiquitous connectivity shifted within several months.
Right.
Like, you know, like if you talk about those evolutionary timelines, the pandemic unto itself forced us going from, hey, working from home is pretty cool and a luxury that a very few people have, to within weeks, if not days for some companies, shifted the entirety of their infrastructure through whether it was VPN, however they did it, the security protocols, everything, and just went, get people home. And now look at where we are, right? And that's in a really short time. So it's like these evolutionary jumps, you're right. Like, I mean, it's an odd thing how quickly technology is changing. And for very large corporations, governments, just any entity that has more than a few hundred people, you know, it's upgrading these types of systems.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's I think the other thing that's really, that really jumps in is the security level, right? Because look, like I can pick up my phone and order movie tickets. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what's the worst thing that happens if something happens there and there's a breach in some capacity? Okay. So my movie tickets don't get produced the way they're supposed to. Maybe my credit card information, it's one individual. And so, you know, there is a threat there. There is a risk there always when you're doing something through technology. But that organization, that company, or whoever they've hired to set that up has really focused on one small niche of one particular aspect of being able to transfer digitally information. And, you know, hazard it to say that there's not countries out there, and there is in the real world, countries out there that are trying to attack Grant Bifulci by getting onto my phone somehow and trying to get on. There's criminal activity for sure, but not countries that are looking at espionage, you know. Whereas with the Canadian government, there's always a concern that somebody is trying to wiggle their way into every aspect of the Canadian government, citizenship, you know, whatever. Ordering movie tickets is not the same as trying to get a passport. There's no direct correlation between the level of security required between those two things and the level of processing to make sure that we don't jeopardize national security. So it's going to be a slower process. I don't think it's not inevitable. I think it just has to be a much slower process. And there's a lot of moving pieces that have to come together for that to happen. And then how do you balance that against COVID, where we have 230,000 federal employees, and I'm not sure if that's the right number, but I'm pretty close, I think. You know, all of a sudden doing what you said, organizations that have to work from home. For a 20-person company, that's not so bad. For 230,000 people that have to all of a sudden work from home and still have maintain a level of security that they've been comfortable with over these years, that's a really big undertaking. And that's going to take some time. So other things get pushed to the back burner, right? So applications or processes that can be modified without the threat or risk of being able to do so, I think they take those steps. If there's things that are going to cause risk or are going to cause threat, then it's a much slower process, and the evolution is not going to be able to keep up with the technology that's coming into play for simpler applications.
Right. Now, like, I mean, you mentioned systems in that sense, and it's like you're right. Like, I mean, you know, just going back to the security thing alone, is that there was, I mean, look at in the U.S., multiple cities have been victims of cybercrime in the sense of lockdown through ransomware, where cities are literally just being forced to pay millions of dollars to criminals just to unlock their files. Yeah. You don't know whether or not what's happened with those files after they're unlocked, who they've been shared with. Can you buy, you know, all of that data on the dark web, those kind of things. So yeah, absolutely. Security is terrifying. Like it's happening around the world to all types of governments, from municipal right straight through to federal. It's a scary prospect for sure. I guess the next thing, like, I mean, as far as the, you mentioned systems unto itself. So let's talk about modern correspondence systems, right? Is that, like, that's something that is at least the path of least resistance, call it, you know, and a lot of things. Like, I mean, you and I have talked a lot about even like the concepts of configuration versus customization and those kind of things. And perhaps maybe that's also the underlying thread here, is that do governments, you know, does the trepidation come in where it's, yes, there's all of these different aspects that need to be considered, including privacy and access controls and all those, who has the ability to see what, you know, the concept of workflow and those kind of things, and it's how to measure and manage that, the compliance aspects and reporting and all that. But when you look at something that is a system that is, call it, you know, for the most part, pre-built and kind of ready to roll with a smaller amount of configuration versus that customization thing, is that the path of least resistance for governments to really truly modernize their correspondence?
I think so. I mean, it makes sense to me, right? And there's the whole argument about customization or configuration, and I think that if you can get the same level of efficiency, the same level of process management with configuration related activity versus customization, I think you're way better off. I mean, in most systems, the only time that the system is functioning at 100% efficiency is the day it's released, assuming that there's no fundamental issues on the day of release. Right. After that, business process changes. Everything changes. And so being able to configure an application and try and keep it as current or relevant to your business processes as your business processes change, it's much easier to do with a configurable piece of software. And I think that's part of the challenge, right? Even with, when you're putting large systems in place for large amounts of staff, you have to make sure that the system fits for everybody. You're trying to make sure that it fits for everybody. You're trying to make sure it works for every aspect of that department. And so you're making changes, but the fact is that things change at a much quicker rate than even configuration allows. So you really have to stay on top of it. And it's one of the things that we come across on a regular basis, is we install a solution somewhere, an organization's very happy with it, and 2 months later, there's a change in the organization, a change in how things are done, process management changes, opinions on process management change, and the system now has to be adjusted every time to fix or work with the current process. I mean, I can give you a really funny example. We did some work for a client one time, and it was basically a form, an electronic form, and they said, you know, we need this form created so I can fill it out online as opposed to using paper-based forms. And I said, okay, and then what happens once you fill it out? Well, we print 3 copies, and then it goes to the different departments, departments within that organization. And I said, great, so where does the first copy go? Well, this one goes to department or section A. Where does the second one go? It goes to section B. Where does the third one go? It goes in the garbage. Why are you printing 3 copies of the form? I don't know. That's what we've always done. And so there used to be a value to it for whatever reason, but, you know, it's the way they've had the forms produced in the past. So we're not really sure why we have the third one produced. We don't utilize it right now, but we may use it again, or we may never use it again. But for now, we need to automatically print off 3 copies. And so that was kind of a, and this is going way back, right? This is not something that's more current, but it's just an example of the fact that there's process, and you know, a lot of time in the from a government perspective, you know, no one wants to be the guy that changes things, right? And it's there's positive change, but to radically change something comes with a risk. And I think that, you know, unless you can see all facets of it, unless you can see every possible way to do this, and it's a big undertaking in very large organizations, especially when it goes across multiple organizations, it's there's a lot of uncertainty to making a change, because you're not seeing all of the cogs in the wheel, and you're trying to make a change for positive, for efficiency, for whatever it is. But oftentimes, there's unless you do a full evaluation on every possible impact that it could have, you're better to stay the way you are.
So
I'm not saying you're better. I'm saying that that's the conclusion that's brought forward.
But I guess so. Let's close out on this thought, though, is that, you know, okay, we're talking about being, you know, implementing smarter correspondence. You want a system, because you mentioned, like, you know, the workflow scenario and processes, right? It's like being able to actually, like, the example that you gave is the perfect example of why you need a document management system to be able to ensure that your processes are running at optimum levels at all times. And again, that's that digital aspect of it, right? Is that, you know, you think of, like, let's go through, like, just the list really quickly, like the you know, implementing and providing that seamless integration scenario, right? If the more departments that start to realize that one single, call it platform, the, you know, call it the one throat to choke scenario, is going to enable integration far easier.
Yes.
It's going to allow you to collect and manage every kind of weird document type that exists in, call it the modern age, right? Yeah. Is that from emails to PDFs to form fills to all of those kinds of things, with and taking away that manual process of, okay, so where do I file this now? Where does this go? And what happens when that person goes on vacation or retires or calls in sick for 3 days, right?
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned also, like, just, you know, governments around the world too. Obviously, it's like that mobile connectivity. You need to, it's not just single people either. Like, I think a lot of the times when people look at connectivity, they think of individuals sitting at desk to connect individually into said system to have access. No, it's about connecting teams as well,
yeah.
Right? But then also enabling, like, you know, obviously there's the collaboration aspect, but there's also the privacy aspect. You get into the, well, we just talked about it, the analytics portion of it, right? It's like, what analytics are you trying to implement and track, right? It's the, so who's working on what, where it is in the life cycle, like all of those things, again, makes it a lot easier if you're using a single system across an entire government, as opposed to these disparate systems of kind of the legacy mindset, because that makes for smarter government as well.
Yeah, and the other thing that sorry to interrupt there, Scott, but the other thing that really is interesting about configuration versus customization is that you put your business process in place in customization, and you pretty much have to know your business process before you customize the solution. I always tell folks when they're in a configuration environment that you can put your best guess in, and I'm not talking about completely just, you know, throwing a whole bunch of things up in the air and grabbing one that looks good. I'm talking about you really do some evaluation on your business process, but with configuration, you provide yourself the ability to reverse engineer your workflow processes based on what's really happening. So if I have a process that says it goes from A to B to C, and I find out that every time it goes to B, someone redirects it to a different group, then I change my business process to fit what is actually happening most of the time. It that allows that sort of functionality that you can reverse engineer on those things. And so you can tune it basically with configuration. So it allows you to modernize your process based on what you see happening in the past and always having that opportunity to do so. without having to go back and try and create a whole bunch of spaghetti code, you know?
You could be almost military-esque where it's like your new motto will become what? Audit, adapt, and evolve.
Exactly. Right. And that's really what should happen. The difficulty is understanding and making sure that aspect of it is understood, that you can stay most efficient if you keep adapting the application. The problem is that it's prioritization, as we talked about right in the beginning. So, you know, things pop up that are perceived as being more of a priority, and those priorities are handled in accordance with how they're ranked. And so if my correspondence solution is a little bit out of date, it's really difficult to see the value of keeping it 100% efficient. And that's the thing that needs to be illustrated, that, you know, it doesn't seem like a big thing sometimes if it goes to the wrong person and that person redirects it. But when it happens 230 times or 230,000 times a day, it has a big impact. And
absolutely.
So the cost benefit of keeping it current is really hard to establish. But if we can demonstrate that value, then it makes a lot of sense to put it as a priority. So that's part of the challenge that we have with these kinds of solutions.
And let's end on that word demonstrate. Because if somebody would like to understand how they want to make their correspondence smarter, their workflows better, and how it can reside into one system, give us a call. We'll set you up with your own demo of the Work Dynamics platform. How's that? Is that good?
That's
coming from the marketing guy. There you go.
That's a great segue.
There you go. All right. Well, Grant, as always, thank you. Thanks to the listeners. I hope you enjoyed the conversation today. And if you have any questions, please reach out to us. Head to the website, fill out the forms, info apps, all those kinds of emails. Call us. Happy to have any of these conversations in person as well anytime, because I know there's a lot of moving parts to this. This is not a download an app on your phone to order a sub from Subway.
Right.
It's a much bigger scenario, so we're more than happy to help. So, Grant, as always, thank you so much, and until the next time.
Thanks, Scott.